the winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guests, heard on Voice of Barbados. You can call us at 434-1790. You can email us at cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guests is brought to an association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. Plenty lottery games to win. Scratch. Are you for win something? So run and get your ticket. Scratch. Scratch and you could win it. Over 120,000 in cash. Scratch. Barbados Lottery. Scratch. So run and get your ticket. Scratch. Scratch and you could win it. Over 120,000 in cash. Scratch. Barbados Lottery. Scratch. It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and Barbados Lottery.
Well, the West Indies South Africa series just around the corner. Yes, indeed, time flies. And on June the 10th, they'll be getting to some serious action in St. Lucia. And of course, we want to start our preview of the West Indies South Africa series. It promises to be a good series. The West Indies doing pretty well in recent times. And of course, from a West Indian perspective, we're hoping that they continue. One would imagine that South Africa will be tougher opponents, but we shall see. Over the weekend, the unfortunate news about Minley testing positive, but I'm told that he's okay in terms of isolation and, you know, getting the best of care. And of course, it's sometimes a mental thing. Let's hope that the young Jamaican can come through this with flying colours. And as Red Spurrier reported in the sports news this evening, the team is busy at practice. Now, without any further ado, we're going to go and talk to Mike Hazeman. He's got very little time with us this evening. Dr. Asker Mansingh is with us as well. And we've got Suresh Raghunath. These are very, 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 very busy men. So I'm going to cut all the talk and go and talk to Mike Hazeman first of all. Hello, Michael. How are you, my friend?
Andrew, very nice to chat to you. Very nice to see you again.
Good. Where are you? Where are you? What part of the world are you? You're in the White House with Joe Biden.
I'm in Los Angeles, Andrew. I've been here now for some 15 years. As you know, I was based in Miami for a while. I'm working a lot in the Caribbean, but in LA now, and loving the weather here and loving the fact that Joe Biden is in the White House.
Indeed. All right. No, talking about the Caribbean, are you coming to the Caribbean for cricket? Of course, international cricket commentator, you come in?
It looks like I am. I'm very excited about that prospect. And, you know, the Caribbean's a place that's very dear to my heart. I've spent so much time there. I remember when I was quite young, still living in Australia at the time. And in fact, no, I was holidaying back in Australia. And I was watching quite a fiery series. I think McDermott was involved for Australia, catching up with that. And I was watching that. And I'm just saying at some stage, I must go to the Caribbean. I must spend some time there. And I've been so lucky to spend a lot of time there. And it's something I always love doing. So fingers crossed it all comes out and I'm there for the series. So I think it's going to be a beauty. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, you just got 10 minutes with us to see this. Unfortunately, we're going to certainly come back to you. But what are your expectations for the series, though, in terms of South Africa and the West Indies?
Well, there's no doubt that South Africa, it's a crunch time for South Africa. I mean, South Africa have been on the slide. And to be brutally honest, they've been very disappointing. The South African public, as people are in the Caribbean, sporting crazy. I mean, they're very big in their rugby here as well, obviously, and it's turning towards the rugby season now in South Africa. But the cricket season, or the cricket in the Caribbean, is going to be starting about 4 p.m. local time in South Africa. So that's a great time for them to be watching the cricket. And they'll be expecting big things from the cricket side because they haven't been good. Mark Boucher is definitely under some pressure. They only won the one series last summer, and they've slipped, as you know, down to number 7. The West Indies have overtaken them and jumped a couple of spots, so they're ahead of South Africa now. So it's a crunch series, and it's a series now where South Africa have got to make sure they play well in the Test series, but also those five T20s, because they haven't won a T20 international series for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they can win it against the West Indies? Talk to me about that.
I think I'll be very surprised. Yes, I think they can. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm familiar with the conditions in St. Lucia. Let me just tell you one thing, though. I was a little surprised when Victor Mponsang, the convener selectors, came out and said that they picked a squad, and it's a squad of 19. The squads are extended these days because of COVID. A squad of 19, but he said that the tracks are very slow and low in the Caribbean, so they picked a lot of spinners. Now, they picked four spinners in that squad, and they have picked six quicks, but there's only three quicks that everyone can rely on in Test match cricket, and guys that people know, and that's some good ones, Nokia, Rabada, and also Ngidi. So I don't think they did their homework. I mean, St. Lucia is not a slow track.
No, it's not at all. Good for pace bowling.
Yeah.
As we've seen in recent times, yes.
Exactly. So it's a track that I'm looking for action from the quicks at that surface. And I think South Africa, the selection panel, I think have misread it right at the start.
Oh, dear. Oh, that's interesting. Well, stay with us. We know we just got a couple minutes left. Of course, we've got Suraj Raghunath, the former West Indies batsman with us, and, of course, Dr. Ashkar Mann Singh. Let's go to you, Suraj, and pick up on what Mike Hazeman was saying. What are your expectations for the series West Indies versus South Africa? Good evening to you, sir.
Yes, good evening, and special greetings to Mike as well, Audia and Ellie. Wish him safe travels into the West Indies. I expect that it's going to be a keenly contested series. For West Indies, we've been moving in the right direction of late in test matches. We've had two pretty decent series, Bangladesh and then Sri Lanka here in the Caribbean. So we are expecting that upward movement to continue. But I think it's going to be a competitive series all the same. The T20 series is also going to be keenly contested, but I think West Indies would have the edge in the T20, a clearer edge, I should say, as against the Test match series.
Mm-hmm. So, but if we had to squeeze you and come off that wall, do you think West Indies can win the Test matches, Suraj?
Yes. Based on what I've seen recently, I'm very encouraged. And it also is compounded by the fact that South Africa is under a lot of pressure. They have not been doing well.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to the poor performances of some of their key players, I think as well the pressure that is on the coaching staff and management to produce results. And Mike alluded to that a little bit, speaking about the pressure on Mike Boucher. I think that in itself is going to contribute, and it's going to weigh heavily on them as well, especially playing away from home against a side that is with some momentum in the West Indies.
Mm. Well, I know you got to go up pretty soon as well, around 6:30. You gentlemen are very, very busy making money. We can't blame you for that. We can't envy you as well. And, of course, we know we just got some precious time left with you. Dr. Mansingh is going to join us pretty soon. Just before I bring in Dr. Ford, my co-host, let's come back to you, Michael. When are the South Africans arriving? Can you tell us exactly when they come into the Caribbean?
Yeah, I believe they're arriving. They're looking to arrive about the 1st or the 2nd. That's what I've heard. They want to get there as soon as they can to get acclimatized the conditions. I think quite simply, the South Africans will get a bit of a surprise when they get in St. Lucia. When they arrive there and they see the surface, I hope they've done some homework since they've selected their squad, because there wasn't much homework done before they selected the squad. And the batsmen will like it. I mean, let's face it, the tracks in South Africa can be quick and they can be quite bouncy. So the batsmen will like it. I think Rabada will like it. I think Nokia will like it. And they are the key guys. End of story. It's Nokia, Rabada. And then I look at Dean Ogre. Dean Ogre is captain for the first time in a series. He's captained one test before at Lord's, but they didn't win. He said, by the way, that he doesn't want to captain ever again after he lost that test match at Lord's. And he was quite serious. So he's had a change of mind, and that's okay. But he's a terrific guy, and he's a nuggety guy, and he's someone you want at the top of the order. He will like the surface, but watch those two quicks, Nokia and Rabada. They're the boys.
You've got just a couple of minutes left. Let's go to Dr. Ford. I'm sure he may have a question for you. Doctor, good evening to you, sir.
Good night to everyone. And good night to you, Mike, and the listeners. Mike, okay. What's been happening with the captaincy in South Africa? There have been many changes, and I know since... You know, you would have had Smith as a steady captain and Faf, but now we're seeing a lot of changes with De Kock coming in for a while, and now Bavuma and Elgar. Why all the changes in captaincy for the South African team?
Yeah, it was a little bit confusing. Graham Smith, as the director of cricket of South Africa, he wasn't settled, and they wanted to try and look at some interim captains before they settled on someone. Now, I'm not convinced that was the right way to go. De Kock as captain was certainly an error. It affected his own performance. If you watched him captain in the Pakistan, you could see that he just wasn't interested in being a captain, really, the way he handled it. was a far cry from what Faf du Plessis did. I mean, Faf was a brilliant captain and a fine performer for South Africa, but there's a real void at the moment. Auger, again, is a stopgap, so he's not going to be forever. They're hoping that Aidan Markram can really clinch the spot at the top of the order on the tour in the Caribbean and kick on and then really press for that captaincy job, because he is a former under-19 South African captain. Mm. That's what they're hoping for, but his form hasn't quite been good enough, Doc.
Considering the performances this year, especially in Test cricket, where has the team been falling down? Has it been the batting, or has it been, you know, the bowling looks pretty good on paper, but what's the problem with the batting?
Okay, so the spin department in Pakistan was an issue for the South African batting. That really caused major concerns. The tracks there were very good. They were fairly quick and bouncy to start with, but allowed the spinners to get in the game and play a big part. So they're undone by spin. I think there's been a lack of confidence. There's youngsters around the place as well that are breathing down some necks. Just watch a guy called Kyle Varane. He's someone who I think is a wonderful young player, and I expect him to get a good run in the trip to the Caribbean. So watch him as an example. But the captaincy's been a real mess. It has been, and they haven't picked the right persons, e.g. Quinton de Kock. Elgar will do a very determined job. That's what they need. They need that good old-fashioned determination that South Africa's had over the years back with the lineup. It's been missing for a while, so they're hoping he can bring it back. And as I said, hoping Markram gets a good run and a lot of runs, and also wants to do the captaincy job later.
Just got a final question for you.
Bavuma's been... okay, go ahead.
No.
I forgot Bavuma, yes.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Doc, continue.
I was just looking... And his performance, he's been in the team for quite a long time, and now he's been elevated to captaincy, but he's never really kicked on and dominated a place. How do you explain him being a captain in one of the formats now?
It's interesting, because he wasn't a fixture at all in the one-day lineup or the T20 lineup, but he has done well domestically. As a domestic captain as well, he's done well. He's played in the test side for a long time, and he has only got that 100, but he has got a very good 90 against Australia, also to back that up a couple of years ago with the Wanderers. So he hasn't performed as well as he would like, but he's got a very good cricketing brain. So he's someone that I think will bring the right values they want back into the lineup as well. Again, he's determined. He'll run things his way. He's a very single-minded sort of individual, and he knows exactly what he wants to get out of his teammates. And I think right now, when the side's in a little bit of limbo, they've got to make sure they get that right. Obviously, the relationship with the coach, Mark Boucher, is really important. And as we alluded to, he is under enormous pressure if South Africa don't play well in the Caribbean. But I think that Bavuma will be... I think he'll do a very good job. I really do. And he seems to have improved as a player since he's had that role as a captain. It's only been a short while, but he's taken on responsibility and performing better in my book. He's talented.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike, I know you got to go, but let's do this again sometime very, very soon. It was really great seeing you again, and we hope to be able to talk to you soon when you come to the Caribbean. Enjoy the rest of it. What time is it now there? Are you in the same time as we? 6:30 now. What time is it now?
What do we got? We're
3:30
here in LA.
Okay, 3:30 in LA. Enjoy LA. All right. No problem at all.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it too, Andrew. Thank you. Nice to chat to you guys. See you soon.
Okay, good. So there you have it. Mike Haseman, the international commentator, coming to the Caribbean, saying that the team will be arriving around the first or the second, and giving us some insight into some of the players that we should look forward to seeing. Dr. Ashka Man Singh is with us. We got Suraj Raghunath as well. Let's go to Dr. Man Singh. Hello, Dr. Singh. How are you? Nice to see you.
Good evening. Very good, thanks. Yes, nice to see you after a while.
All right. Now, let's change focus. Stay with us, Suraj. We're going to come back to you, because I note with interest that veteran commentator Red Spurrier has been putting some warm lashes in Shannon Gabriel and reckons that maybe the time has come that we should move on. I'm going to ask you about that in a minute, and maybe the possible construct of the West Indies team. They're going to be playing two test matches. But let's go to you, Dr. Man Singh. Unfortunate situation of the weekend in relation to Minley from Jamaica. What's the latest on him?
Well, as far as he's concerned, all is well. He's been asymptomatic and is likely to remain so. So we're not too worried about that. The point is, as you heard sort of ad nauseum, that we do have bubbles and we have protocols. And the idea in this is that if people do end up with a positive test, that it's not spread across the whole squad. As you recognize, the COVID virus takes about 7 days to manifest itself. Ooh. You could actually catch the disease, have a test done 3 days before, have a test done on arrival, and you'll be negative. And then presto, the last test, which is over a period of time, comes back positive. And the reason they're timed in such a way is to catch that eventuality. And well, it's probably the second time that we've done so.
Mm-hmm. Just before Dr. Ford comes in, I'm sure he's got some questions for you. Suraj Raghunath has just got a couple of minutes left. Suraj, as I was saying, Shannon Gabriel, is he going to be an important cog in the West Indies wheel, in your view? Reg Parade doesn't seem to think so.
Yeah. Well, I respect the great Reg Parade at all times. But I think Shannon is important for us. We are playing in St. Lucia, arguably the fastest track in the Caribbean now. And I think his pace is important. I think he would have had enough opportunities to rest and maybe get over whatever little niggles he may have had. So I expect to see Shannon spearheading the attack for that matter. And, Jason Holder continues to do well. And Roach, continues to transform himself as he has gotten more experience and more mature in the craft. So those three I expect to be very much at the forefront leading the attack. And Craig Braffett himself, has a renewed confidence in his personal game one and the fact that, he has the support now of the team gelling around him as captain. I expect to see some positives here. And really, I'm very hopeful that the team is going to be very competitive and win this series as well.
I note with interest that you talked about Craig Braffett, but you didn't talk about an opener with Craig. Who's going to open the batting? Is it going to be Campbell from Jamaica? Or you might have to come to retirement?
Well, based on what I've been seeing, I think, again, kudos to the selectors as well. They've tended to stick with players and they may very well continue with Campbell, because there hasn't been much cricket being played. So it's difficult for them to just, introduce someone, especially if that someone is not doing particularly well. And it's just two test matches, so it's difficult, really. Added, difficulty with making a change for a two test match series as well. So I don't think they may have too many options, but to possibly continue with Campbell at least for these next two test matches.
Mm-hmm. And who will bat at 3 and 4? Of course, Bonner and Kyle Mears. The team picks itself then, you think?
Well, they have now cemented their have cemented their places, mm-hmm. Right? The next place, I think Shamar Brooks is someone I set store by. I think he has done well. I think he's maybe a little bit unfortunate not to have played in the last series as well. But he will come into the mix. I think it's a little bit of a touch and go, but I think we're beginning to see a little bit of a settled West Indies team, mm-hmm. in itself, with De Silva doing reasonably well in that middle order, lower mm-hmm. middle order as well. Mm-hmm. So there is a good measure of stability I see developing in the West Indies team, which is good. Mm-hmm. And that in itself will, give a lot of confidence to the players and augur well for the team going forward into this series.
Just before you go, because I know you got something else to do, this controversy about contracts, with Hetmyer not getting a contract, Brooks, you spoke about him. This is all unfortunate, you think?
I think it's rather unfortunate. But there might be things happening that we are not aware of between the West Indies Cricket Board and Hetmyer. What I would like to see, however, is that Hetmyer should not just be left to himself. I think, and I'm assuming that this hasn't happened, and if it hasn't, then it should take place, that there needs to be a serious discussion between the West Indies cricket authorities and Shimroy Hetmyer. He's such a wonderful talent, and it will be a shame to see him just, waste away. And I think that the West Indies Cricket Board and themselves have not set clear policies, if you ask me. I think the guidelines in terms of fitness and so on has been very blurred, right, because I find it very difficult to understand that one can say that Chris Gayle is fit and Cornwall is fit and Shamroy Hetmyer and Royston Chase is not fit. Mm. Right, so it's either you're fit or you're not fit. Mm. Right, and if there's a standard and you don't meet the standard, it doesn't matter who you are, you should not be selected. And if it is that is your criteria, then you got to stick with your criteria. And I think mixed signals have been sent to Hetmyer, and I think it's important for the young man that there has to be some clarity and some definition in his mind as to what he's expected to do to get selected, and else we risk losing him you know, all the different T20 leagues that he could possibly get himself into, and pretty soon, you know, might just forget about West Indies cricket.
Were you surprised that Roston Chase didn't get a contract?
I'm a little bit surprised, because I think Roston has done, you know, not, I wouldn't say he hasn't lit the world afire, but you know, he has done reasonably well. But you know, I guess the emergence of Bonner and Myers has really thrown a spoke into the wheel.
Right.
You know, and that in itself meant that, you know, you have to be moving on.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. Well, Shiraj, thank you very much indeed you're making another point.
You're welcome.
All right. Okay. Okay. Shiraj Raghunath having to leave us. Mike Haseman, just about when we get into the meat of the discussion, but these men are very, very busy. And of course, we are on Mason and Guest. We're going to take a commercial break. We're going to certainly have an interesting discussion with Dr. Askar Mansingh. Roland Holder's joined us as well, and Philip Wallace. So we got a big panel, a top panel of big guns to talk to you on Mason and Guest. Let's pause for a business cause. Mason and Guest is brought to you in association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
Double Draw got winners like peas with enough money paid out.
How much money have you won so far with Double Draw?
$126,000.
$51,800.
Just over $50,000.
How did you feel when you won?
I was very happy.
Quite elated. It would like it to happen again.
The money came in at the right time.
Over $4.7 million paid out so far this year. Get your tickets now.
What you waiting for? Play the Double Draw.
This is Mason and Guest. I'm Andrew Mason, and I've been joined by Dr. Askar Mansingh. We also have Roland Holder and Philo Wallace very much with us here as well. A little bit later on, we hope to touch base with Dominique Warren, who, of course, is the commercial manager of Cricket West Indies at the top of the hour. Now, Dr. Mansingh, how regularly are these guys tested?
How regularly are they tested? Coming into a camp, they're going to get tested a week before they actually leave their residences.
Mm-hmm.
They get tested 3 days before they leave.
Mm-hmm.
Once those are negative, you arrive at your destination, you get tested on the day of arrival. You stay in room isolated until day three, when you get tested again. After that, if it's negative, you're allowed some amount of limited activity, but at day seven is the final test. And if that all of those are negative, then you get tested as needed.
I see. So someone like a Mindy who tested positive, he would have had, I suppose, another test since being the tests that came back positive?
Well, the thing is, once you're positive, then you're effectively isolated, right? You're taken out of the squad, so to speak. You're kept in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're asymptomatic, then you just basically have to serve out the time.
Generally
speaking, you know, it's said that it takes about 2 weeks. Some people are shortening that a bit for somebody to recover from this thing. In fact, in many countries, they don't test again. So once you've had you're positive, 2 weeks later, off you go. Clearly, we don't do that. We will be testing later on. But you have to remember one thing.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that many people have stopped testing after somebody becomes positive for COVID is that test can remain positive for weeks and weeks and weeks. When you actually don't, you're not infected.
Mm.
You just have particles of the virus left in your system, which is coming out positive. So you've got to take any subsequent positive test in that context. But as far as Mindy or anybody else who tests positive, there are protocols that kick into play. Firstly, are they symptomatic or asymptomatic? If they're asymptomatic, you stay isolated. If you're symptomatic, we're going to follow you. If you need hospitalization, you're then transferred to the relevant place.
Just before Dr. Ford comes in, this is a mental thing, I would imagine. I mean, the wait for it, and of course, once you test positive, I mean, what kind of support would you give to someone like a Mindy?
There tends to be a lot of support, starting with psychological or psychologists who are in play.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have a lot of interaction with teammates, with the managers and coaches. But the point is, all of this is virtual, as you can imagine.
Right.
The person is in isolation, a lot more attention. And there's what you'd have to say, you know, the support would kick in a different way, because coaches are now going to be focusing on the squad they do have. And so you've got to make sure that there's somebody who's reaching out and making sure they're okay. And there's enough support staff out there to do that. And the important thing is for them to realize that, you know, just because you've tested positive doesn't mean that you're going to necessarily get ill and take it from there.
Mm.
One thing I will point out is that things will change as more and more people become vaccinated. And you're going to hear of change in protocols. You're going to hear change in all sorts of approaches. But for now, this is how it is.
Just before Dr. Ford comes in talking about these vaccinations, in terms of percentage of the team, you've got a big squad down there. Everybody would have gotten their vaccine by now?
I don't think everybody will be fully vaccinated simply because depending on which vaccine you get, there's a certain time before the second shot.
Okay.
So initially when vaccines came out, we've said that, you know, you get it now and 2 weeks later you get your second shot. It's now being shown that you know, and depending on the sort of vaccine, you may want to wait a bit longer. Certainly with the AstraZeneca, which is the predominant one in the Caribbean, the recommended time is actually 3 months.
3 months, okay.
They are giving it at 8 weeks. Both India and Canada have moved it to 4 months now. But that's more because of availability and widespread. But 3 months is the ideal time in terms of getting efficacy. That's with AstraZeneca. The others, Moderna, Pfizer, etc., which some people have different spacing. So just by virtue of that, most would not have gotten their second shot yet. But most have gotten their first shots.
When you say most, about what, 80% of the squad? You have an idea?
I think it's probably a wee bit more than that.
Okay, so almost.
Yeah, there will be some who don't access it, and there will be some who do not wish to take it.
So you've had people in the squad who have said to you, no, I don't want to be vaccinated. Is that what you're saying?
There are people who said yes, that they do not wish to take it at this time.
Oh, okay, interesting. So there's a story. Dr. Ford?
Oh, good night. Good night, Dr. Mansingh. Outline the testing protocol for the rest of the team after Minli tested positive.
Well, remember, they're in isolation till day three. And after day three, you start training in small squads of three or four people. And the whole rationale behind that is that we know that day seven is when everybody is safe. This is after arrival. But in international cricket, modern day time spans and so on, you cannot wait the entire 7 days to start some sort of activity. So you start with small squads, typically made up of people of not similar skills. Mm-hmm. So you'd have a fast bowler with a spin bowler, with a batsman, with a coach as one squad who would do activities together. So that if worse come to worse and somebody tests positive, at least the whole squad won't get tested, it won't spread to the whole squad. The contact will be with those four people. But having tested positive, everybody's going to redo a test at day seven. Mm-hmm. And if there's any close contact between him and anybody else, and clearly we'll follow that through with further testing. So as I said, it's done as needed. And sometimes as needed means the entire team or the entire squad is tested. Sometimes it means people who've been in close contact have been tested. So you're going to, if somebody tests positive day three, everybody will be tested the next day. Everybody will be tested on day seven. And if need be, we'll have another test on day 10.
Okay, so initially the squad was together when just before getting the positive result for that individual player. Is that correct?
They're together in the extent that they would have flown together with proper mask procedures, proper sanitization and distancing. And at no point would they have been congregated in close proximity without those parameters, without a mask and without proper sanitization.
But they had started some training before the positive tests occurred.
And as I pointed out, you start some training in small clusters and with maintaining certain amount of distance. You're not going to be doing the sort of close contact training that you'd get after the assessment.
Okay, so are the clusters post the positive test related to the original clusters? Or is it random? Or, you know, how do you determine the clusters post the positive test?
You know, I think, so when you arrive, you're not in clusters, you're in isolation. After day three, when you've had your test done, you then form these small clusters, which, as I said, are of people of different skill. And the whole concept behind that is that if somebody in that cluster tests positive, then you have three other people who are going to be taken out and checked in isolation. My understanding with Minli is that he was actually tested during the isolation period, which means that he would not have come in close contact with anybody else.
Okay.
Nonetheless, you will do some testing of everybody just to be absolutely sure.
Okay.
So that the critical thing is that they still maintain mask wearing, they still maintain social distancing, even when they're training. It is not with close contact. You will have distance maintained. Please remember also that holding a ball, for example, is not conclusively. That if you hold a ball, which is smeared with virus, and you roll it along the ground, it is not a risk to the person who collects the ball. So yes. Even when a bowler is bowling to a batsman, that's not any longer considered a close contact risk.
Okay, so the important thing is that when Min Lee tested, got his positive test, he had not yet interacted in small groups with anyone else in the squad.
And certainly, yeah, true. And even if there is any interaction thereafter, it's with masks and distancing.
Mm. Doctor Fur, you don't seem too convinced about that, though, based on your line of questioning.
No, I was just trying to figure out when Min Lee got the test and if the groups post-positive were the same groups after, and if who he could, if the groups are made based on contact tracing or not. But if it is that Min Lee was tested positive while he was in isolation and had not interacted with anyone except when he came on the trip, then I agree that the groups there's no specificity required with the composition of the groups. Yeah. But as you said, everyone will be tested on day 7 post Lee's positive tests. But you're not doing a test before that for the whole group. Are you doing one on day 3? After Minley's test,
everybody would have been tested on day 3.
Day 3,
as
okay.
An entire squad.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anybody who has any close contact, suspected close contact, they'd be tested before day 7. But then at day 7, everybody's tested again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how will the tourists be vetted when they come to the Caribbean? Tourists be vetted when they come to the Caribbean?
The tourists follow a similar sort of, you're talking about the touring team, right?
Yes.
As opposed to tourists. So the touring teams will be coming under similar sort of testing protocol. So they would do what's called 2 weeks of limited contact. Most countries, 2 weeks before a tour, will have their players doing very minimal contact with people. Mm. And I'm talking about family members and so on. In the last week, they're asked to have minimal contact with anybody outside of their immediate family. But day 7, minus 7, which is 7 days before you leave, you're tested. 3 days before you leave, you're tested. Once those are negative, you then fly. As you arrive, you go into isolation in a room, and you're tested on arrival. And you remain there till day 3 when you're tested again. And only then do you come out into these small clusters and then go into full training after day 7 tests. So you have testing from minus 7 to plus 7. Mm-hmm. You'd have a total of 5 tests.
Mm-hmm.
What about the peripheral contacts, people who transport the team?
All of those people are tested. So it depends, once again, on where you are, what the situation is. There are countries where they will be kept within the bubble. There are other countries where they'll be tested regularly, but they wear PPE while they're traveling and will not come into close contact. But everybody who's in proximity in the periphery will be tested or is tested.
I know with some, like the cruise industry, they try to let their individuals only interact with people peripherally who are vaccinated. Is that something that Cricket West Indies is trying to do, or is it that you're just testing the individuals in that peripheral bubble with the team?
I tell you, we're in a state of flux right now, and I'll go a bit broader and say it's not just Cricket West Indies, ICC ourselves. We're having massive discussions right now about what do we do in this post-vaccination era. With in terms of what you're saying, which is, you know, who's allowed, who's not allowed. Two or three things. The idea is to have everybody vaccinated. We recognize everybody's not going to be able to be vaccinated for various reasons. Some people will not simply want to be vaccinated. In some countries, you may not have the vaccine. And I'm talking about globally as well as in the Caribbean. So you have to have contingencies for all. For now, I think we're still committed to testing and having some sort of a biosecure bubble. But what we're, and in that scenario, Doc, you will recognize that those who are in proximity of players will be tested repeatedly, and those who can be vaccinated will be vaccinated. But a day will come in the not too near future where I think the majority of people will be vaccinated, and then you're going to have different protocols for those who are not in terms of how you integrate them into this group. So you would have seen, for example, that even in the Caribbean, we have countries like your own, where if you're vaccinated, you just have to stay in for 24 hours, literally till you get your test. We have other countries where even if you're vaccinated, you still have to quarantine for 2 weeks. And we have those in between, like St. Kitts, for example, where it's 9 days if you've been vaccinated. So whatever we do has to be done in tandem with whatever the national laws are in that particular country. But I think we're moving towards mass, you know, hoping that most people are vaccinated and that, you know, places would relax their restrictions on those who are.
Okay. Well, even though we don't have the COVID tsunami that India had, based on the complexity of the Indian protocols for the IPL, how confident are you about the protocols that we have in place for our series for this summer?
Well, you'll be happy to know it's not our first bubble. In fact, we've been very successful with at least six or seven now. In them have picked up those who've been positive and dealt with them such that they weren't a threat to either series. If you look at the IPL scenario, I think they held their bubble pretty well initially. But two or three things happened. Number one, they started traveling quite a bit. So they went from city to city. Mm. And there's no doubt that that's where the outbreak took place. Number two, I think the unfortunate thing about the Indian scenario is that they had a variant which was terribly contagious. And so at a time when their country was going through a lull and thinking that they'd gotten over this disease to some extent, and let's remember, their vaccination program had started. And even though they'd only vaccinated 2% of their population, that was more than the entire Western Europe population put together. So they had people being vaccinated. Bam comes this, as you say, tsunami of a variant, which is just very hard to contain. And then instead, now, let's look at some parallels. In the CPL in Trinidad last year, the idea was that we'd quarantine for 2 weeks. And because Trinidad had no cases, we would then be free to roam in Trinidad. Within that 2 weeks, Trinidad had its second wave, cases went up, and what we did, we restricted movement. We extended our bubble for 6 weeks. We did not allow people to mix. In the IPL, when that tsunami came, one could argue that perhaps they should have relooked at traveling between city to city. But whatever their rationale was, I think that's where their bubble broke down. You'll notice that in our own scenario in the Caribbean, we have minimal travel, and that travel is by chartered planes from point A to point B and certainly not to point C, depending on whichever tour it is. We're going into countries where some countries have reported no COVID cases for weeks now. So we're going into COVID low-risk COVID areas as opposed to the IPL scenario. So all of that taken into place, we're very confident that our protocols have worked up to now. But we're also very cognizant that a day will come when, you know, somebody, in spite of all of it, may come out positive. These bubbles are not 100% guaranteed. They're minimizing the risk, but they're not always 100% of a guarantee.
Okay. Now, we got Roland Holder up with us, fellow Wallace as well. Roland, how has this affected, first of all, good evening to you, the preparations? We heard on the weekend that Minley had tested positive. How has this affected your plans, Roland?
Hi, good night, Andrew. Good night, listeners. Good night, Doc, by two. Up and on to one in particular, as he is very aware of that special combo bear relationship, Andrew. Don't be jealous.
No.
Generally, so as you would have heard, the training session was cancelled once the positive test was discovered. Mm-hmm. So it would simply have been for the coach, the head coach who was there, and his coaching staff, to redesign the program around the new training schedule, which they would come up with, because it is basically a camp and they have full control of everything during the camp period. So they would have resumed the training, and to date, everything has continued to go well. You can't make up the time that you've lost, but you certainly can put training programs in place to help mitigate any losses you've incurred.
Mm-hmm. So explain what happens. I mean, know that, Minley tested positive in terms of the construct of the training sessions. Small groups?
I think you heard Dr. Mansingh, who is part of our medical advisory committee. He indicated all that. He has been working with Dr. Goldstone and our CMO and all the other members of the medical panel to devise the protocols which we follow.
Mm-hmm.
So the protocols are there for, and they would advise on situations like this. So mm-hmm. It has happened. There are plans in place to address and deal with such situations,
mm-hmm.
which Dr. Mansingh so well explained a short while.
Now, in terms, Roland, of the practice matches, there was some talk of some practice matches before the first test. Are they still on?
Yes, there are two practice matches, a three-day game and a four-day game. The three-day game comes first. Mm-hmm. So they will still be gearing up towards that. There's one thing to practice, to have net sessions, etc. Mm-hmm. But a match scenario presents a completely different avenue for mm-hmm. preparation. Mm-hmm. The batsmen get to spend time in the middle in a real-life situation with slips in place, and when you edge the ball, somebody's likely to catch it. Mm-hmm. There'll be umpires in place, so, you know, decisions will be made. So you in your preparation, you actually get in match preparation mm-hmm. in the lead-up to what is the series. And I'm sure that with a test squad not having been selected, that there may be consideration to your form in going into the test match.
Mm-hmm. So when is this first practice match scheduled for in terms of dates?
Off the top of my head, Andrew, I would just need to check the schedule to confirm.
Take your time, Roland.
And I do know there are 3 days between the three-day game and the four-day game.
Right.
So if we work backwards, let's see.
Mm-hmm.
I think that second game is due to finish on the 2nd or the 3rd of June.
Right.
So let's work back 4 days from there. Andrew, your maths might be better than mm-hmm. mine. If you were back from there, and then 3 days in between the games,
mm-hmm.
I gather that first game is probably scheduled to start probably on Friday or
so. Okay, so the first, right. Starts on Friday, 3 days, and then, of course, the four-day game, and you look towards the whole question of that test match. And just to confirm, the South Africans, well, Mike Hazelwood was saying they're going to be coming between the first and the second. Can you confirm this, Roland? Exactly when do they arrive in the Caribbean?
1st of June.
1st of June. So the South Africans are in the Caribbean on the 1st of June. Philo Alfonso Wallace is with us. Philo, nice to see you. Where are you, Philo? Are you in Barbados? Did you sneak in again?
Hi, Andrew. Good evening.
Did you sneak into your country again?
I'm saying, Roland. Your wide audience. I also have to say to people at Max DeSantis.
Yes.
As well. And then a friend of yours by the name of Allison, her birthday's today.
Oh, yes. Mine is tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow.
Yes.
Greetings to you in advance. Yes, and also yes. My good friend, Sherlyn.
Yes.
I'm in London, Andrew.
London.
At the moment. I'm between London and Barbados.
You're between London and Barbados. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I have some responsibilities in London, so I can't shy away from them.
How's the weather, fellow?
Just for the moment.
How's the weather?
Andrew, I've been here for 3 weeks. I have quarantined for 10 days.
Oh, dear.
And I've had rain for 21 days.
It's
just rain, Andrew.
Rain.
I went down to the Kia Oval on Thursday to see Kemar Roach.
Right.
Obviously, he was playing his final game for Surrey.
Against
Middlesex. And, Andrew, I commend these guys who play county cricket. It is bitter cold.
Yes.
And they're running in and they're playing, they're bowling hard, they're batting, they're feeling, they're enjoying the game. Now, Surrey was just having a trial. They have 5,000 people at the stadium. Now, it holds more than 5,000. And being a member of Surrey, I was invited to watch the first day's play. And it was unbelievable. It's just a bit of cold. They're playing cricket.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy for Roach. I thought he'd done himself wonderfully well. And he's put himself in good standing for the future.
Mm-hmm.
I think if they're going to look for another overseas player, they'll ask him to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good to see Kemar Roach. Obviously, 32 years old, I think he is, but enjoying cricket, playing well, and you know, and in conditions that obviously are not Caribbean conditions, to really hold his hand up and produce those performances for Surrey, I think that he has done himself really well. He's a good ambassador as well
mm-hmm.
for Barbados and for West Indies cricket.
Mm-hmm.
But the weather here is not all that great. There's a lot of rain, a very blistery cold wind. Also, Andrew, I'm very winter clothes, and it's supposed to be summer.
Oh dear!
How cold it is.
Very, very, very cold. We're going to certainly look at the possible construct of the side. You know, with interest, when Suresh Raghunath was on, he was very concerned about someone to certainly open with Brathwaite. And I know Red Spur recently has been talking about Shannon Gabriel. But in a minute or two, we're going to certainly look at that. Dr. Mansingh, let's come back to you now. Any possibility at all of fans? Is that that's completely through the window?
I'm not too sure, because that obviously is the prerogative of the ministries of health.
Okay.
I know that in other competitions in the Caribbean,
knock
they'll talk
I can.
About them. But Roland,
if I can help you out.
Yeah, Roland, I think you would know the
yeah, Roland.
Yeah, sorry, the government of St. Lucia has said no fans at this time. And Andrew, just a quick correction. The actual three-day game actually starts on May 26th.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one on May 3rd. And the four-day game on May 31st.
That's tomorrow then?
Yes, yeah. It is.
Okay, so my birthday. Wonderful. And of course, the Independence Day of Guyana. So they start on a good day. No doubt about that. So May 26th. So, of course, we can make a note of that. So you're saying no fans at all, Roland, in relation to St. Lucia? The same thing in Grenada? No, you haven't gotten there as yet.
There is the possibility of fans, but that is still under discussion. It's the government who will make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So they have been looking into it, but no firm decision has been made. Mm-hmm. But we know for sure that St. Lucia, no fans.
No fans in St. Lucia. Let's come back to you now, Dr. Mansingh. Are you surprised that there's some people in the camp that don't want to take the vaccine?
No, I don't think that the cricket population is any different than the rest of the population. It's a personal choice. There are personal risks that you take. There are personal, you know, convictions that you have. So I'm not surprised by that. One hopes there won't be too many of them. But you know, it's no, I wouldn't expect 100% at all.
Mm. Doc Ford.
Yeah, well, I do know that, as Dr. Mansingh said, there are various reasons, and for some, logic or science doesn't change their position once it's made. I think it's unfortunate because I have heard that there are cases where some of the franchises there, most of the players don't really seem to be keen on vaccination. And I think in a world sport where you move around so much and travel, you know, the risk is greater than, it's like being a frontline worker. You're exposed to more variant people that have come from different places with more variants than the average individual who is in one place. I'd like to ask Roland a question though, which is, since you have the squad assembled there together and the last test will finish maybe the 22nd of June or so, is it that the squad will remain for the whole series, or is it that you'll have to be trying to get individuals home to their islands sometime during that period?
So at the end of the four-day game, the selectors will pick the test squad.
Mm-hmm.
And once they do that, we will then be tasked with the responsibility of moving those who are not involved to their various destinations, home destinations.
Mm.
So the can we compare the cost of keeping them together versus burying them early? From a, I guess it's accommodation and food and transportation. Do you think it's a large quantum that variance between the two?
In any event, you're going to have to move them home at some point. So there's no additional cost in moving them home. But if you bear in mind that the more people you have within the bubble, the harder it is to manage.
Mm-hmm.
So once you reduce, meaning once the selectors have selected their squad, then you move people home, you have to worry about the ability to practice. So can the facility sustain 40-odd people practicing even though there's a test match going on? Can the bubble sustain? Because remember, once South Africa arrived, you add 30 people to the bubble, and then when the TV crew arrives, you add 50-odd people to the bubble. So the larger the bubble, the greater the risk. So if you can move someone that's not involved home, of course, the selectors would look at ensuring they have cover for any eventualities, then it is usually much safer and better for us to do so.
Mm.
What about a player, not saying that such a player exists, but what about if there's a player that can possibly be in this squad and be in a one-day squad or, you know, in a white ball squad? How do you determine if a player just stays on versus going back home and returning and going through that 7-day pre-travel test and that sort of thing, where they may just be you know, less than a month in between the two
someone like, for example, a Jason Holder, who is very likely to feature in both the tests and the T20s, he will stay. If there's another player in that setup who will be involved in the T20s, that person will stay as well, to ensure that they continue to get the practice that is required. But there aren't a lot of those players who are across both formats at this point in time.
Dr. Mansingh, in the case, I mean, the medical team has a much larger purview and responsibility. Before, it may have been just fitness and dealing with injuries, but now you have the biosecure bubble and that sort of thing. But getting back to the injuries and other things that can happen in a series, your plans for moving individuals into hospitals to get x-rays or scans or to see specialists, how have you predetermined that bubble for those eventuality?
Yeah, you're right. So these are extensions that you've got to make provisions for. As far as doing investigations are concerned, we tend to do them in smaller institutions or have a dedicated time period when you get it done, whereby, let's take an MRI scan, for example, the machine itself would be sanitized and it'll be in isolation for when the player goes in. The transfer from the bubble to that place would be with the player in PPE, in proper protective wear, in a sanitized car with a driver who's either in the bubble or wearing proper PPE. They go into the facility with minimal contact. As I said, it's isolated at the time, so they know the patients around. It's been sanitized. And when they come back into the bubble, they then doff their PPE in their rooms. So they go directly to the room, doff the PPE, bathe, put all that PPE in a plastic bag and dispose of it as instructed. This is done whether they go to a MRI facility, whether they go to a specialist, or in some cases, even if they have to go to an embassy for a visa, as we've had in the past. Also, if they have to go to a hospital, we have designated hospitals with isolated areas where they would have to be kept. But the reality is that if they get hospitalized in most countries, they probably would then have to go through a larger reintegration process than those who just go for an MRI and something. So there are protocols set for how much exposure you've had and how you get reintegrated to the bubble. That can consist of just wearing PPE and coming straight into the bubble, to spending 3 days in isolation, to spending 7 days in isolation.
Mm-hmm. I'd just like to go back to something Serge Raghunath mentioned, which was fitness, and he contrasted the body types of some individuals which were different and who intrinsically and empirically we think to be of different fitness levels. And it takes me back to a discussion we had earlier where you had said that based on where someone was in their fitness, that their fitness level was used to determine their future fitness. But is that basically a good summary of what you had said earlier?
I think that's reasonable. In other words, everybody doesn't have the same pass mark, so to speak.
Okay.
But one thing that they certainly wouldn't want is for you to slip below what you've done before.
Yeah, but you know, my question is this something that is done generally in franchises and in other cricketing nations, that people have different pass marks for fitness? Or is it that there is a certain minimal pass mark that's needed for every individual as a professional, and then once you're above that mark, then you can deal with the varying pass marks? So to summarize my question, does everyone who's name fit pass the minimum pass mark that would be required to be a professional in our region?
There are different standards for different or different ways, criteria for different cricketing countries. In our scenario right now, there is a minimum pass mark that's recommended, but there are special considerations given to people who either may be coming off of an injury, there may be people who just will never achieve that because they just simply cannot, are otherwise capable to perform on the field. And then what we do is slowly try to work towards that minimum standard. So to answer your absolute question, is there a minimum pass mark below which you will not be considered at all? The answer is no. That was in the past. What they're saying now is that they'll take individual circumstances depending on what it is. Mm-hmm. Is there any room for people slipping below what their basic minimum was? That too is no. Is our system ideal and perfect? That also is no. And there will always be tweaking done. There will always be more parameters that are brought in. And that's work in progress. And you're going to see changes from time to time. But what it is right now, what I can tell you, everybody's aware of, everybody's bought into, and is being practiced in other teams. So if you look across the cricketing globe, you'll see a lot of people have lost their contracts this year because of reasons of fitness.
Yeah, that's true. But I am not aware that the variation in the starting point for individuals mm-hmm. is as variable as ours is. And do you envisage or do you think or can you imagine that for someone who is empirically and intrinsically at a higher fitness level than another individual could feel hard done being deemed unfit when he is superior in fitness to another individual who is fit? And this is not someone who may have an injury. This is someone who you think may never be able to make the level that the other guy made.
Well, certainly fitness is one parameter I think that selectors would take into consideration. The other is your cricketing skills. And, you know, if somebody is supremely fit but not performing at the cricketing level that another person is performing, I don't think they should feel hard done. And I'm just talking in general. We're not talking about anybody in specific right now. But the bottom line is this, that the predominant factor, obviously, is cricketing skill and your fitness progress. And let's not say fitness level, your fitness progress from year to year. If somebody is not performing in fitness, chances are they're going to have issues with their performance on the field as well. And we've seen that this year where some people have lost their contracts based off of cricketing reasons and some people have had issues because of fitness. But the bottom line is that, Andrew, I would agree with you that a bare minimum would be absolutely ideal. But and you're comparing us to other countries, till the culture is instilled from an under 15 or under 12 level as to what fitness requires, what you need to do, when we see consistency amongst our franchises, so that we're assured that when somebody comes to the highest level, fitness is not a consideration. You know, when somebody applies for a job in a university, you don't ask them if they know their ABCs. But if they cannot read and write, you then have to start making, taking that into consideration when you're looking at people hiring. It's a discussion we have around the Caribbean in all professions. Should we take people who cannot speak English properly in certain jobs? Well, let's predict that to cricket and fitness. We have to meet them at some point, lift them up. But yes, the ideal scenario is when every under 15 cricketer in the Caribbean would have the same protocol, would pass the same protocol, and would work towards the fitness standards. And there are other countries that do practice that, and that's perhaps why they can have a different standard that they use.
I know Philo may be burning with a question, but I just want to go back to this. I'm not trying to be difficult or repetitive, but just going back to the fact that a chairman, let's say a chief selector can say, or a CWI release can say someone wasn't considered because their fitness wasn't sufficient. And they can be characterized as an unfit player. Yet, for someone else who doesn't have an injury but never was as fit as them, that person isn't characterized in the same way. The inequity and the connotations of the label make it something that seems untenable for me in a professional sport. You know, I don't know if Weeper or anyone else, the agents of cricketers or anyone else has mentioned that, but it just seems like a bitter pill to swallow for me.
I understand, you know, connotations are things that you may not be able to control. I think one thing is transparency and education. Whenever fitness policies are discussed, obviously they're discussed first with the players' representatives and all those concerned internally. But then great effort is made to try and educate everybody outside too as to what the protocols are. And that's what we had our discussion on the last time we'd spoken about this. As I said, things will constantly be tweaked. And once again, it's important that everybody knows what the tweaks are so that they're up to date. But, I understand exactly what you're saying, Doc, that the perception may be something, but the reality is that if you're at a certain fitness level, just keep it, man. Keep that fitness level or keep improving it. and you wouldn't run into this trouble. The issue is that when you're not able to repeat what you repeated last year, and that's both with fitness and with cricket form.
Okay, Philo, I know you want to ask a question.
Thank you, Dr. Ford. Dr. Mansingh, I'm obviously going to question the vaccination.
Mm.
And why is it that Cricket West Indies are not, or should be, or are they trying to sensitize these players the importance of being vaccinated and the ease in which it will ease some of Cricket West Indies' fears in relation to the bubbles and also the players? So a lot of these players jolly around the world. So how is it important for you as a lead in the medical sphere, along with Dr. Oba, to try and get these guys to understand how important it is to be vaccinated?
I think, you know, our chief medical officer, Dr. Dawlat, and Dr. Oba Gutson have spent a lot of time with one-on-one with players. And I agree with you, Philo, the ease, the what some people might consider the obvious logic, etc., is being preached. Now, listen, we live in free societies, and we have to respect the decisions of people, right? But there are leagues in the world that are going to stand up and say, if you're not vaccinated, we're not going to take you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that is when personal decisions will have to be made. I think we still err on the side of freedom of choice, et cetera, et cetera. But, and therefore, we're willing to entertain this discussion. But there are leagues that are going to pop up which will not entertain the discussion. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, we allowed people not to opt out of bubbles that we knew were safe. It was interesting that many of the people who opted, made the choice at that time, made a completely different choice when they went to India, which was this, you know, second most infected country in the world. So choice, you know, there will be people who make decisions and there will be people who change their own decisions. And that might be prompted by external forces or internal forces. Our job is to educate, but give you the right to be yourself.
Thank you.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion.
Roland, is there anything? Roland, is there anything you wanted to tell us that you didn't get to divulge so far this evening?
Well, if there was something that I didn't divulge, it because it I didn't intend to divulge it.
Okay. Yeah. You can tell us Andrew's age if you wish.
I don't think Andrew wants that divulged.
No. Wonderful. But Roland, there must be a tremendous amount of mental stress, though. I mean, being in a bubble, I mean, this is a serious thing, isn't it?
Well, Andrew, what I will say is that it is perhaps even greater stress on the players. Remember, I am, even though I may be in the bubble, I don't have to go on the field and perform and concentrate for those extreme hours. As the game progresses, or as you spend more time in country, my task gets easier. The players still have to go out there and do everything. So I commend the players. I respect them, the effort it takes to be in the bubble. And I can understand when they get stressed out and, you know, want to go outside of the bubble, etc. I can understand those things because it is not the easiest of tasks to be in bubbles for extended periods of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's been a lot of stress in Guyana. And in fact, when young Het Mara didn't get a contract, even his club, the Everest Club, we had several people from Burbies right through to Essequibo, to Demerara, expressing a lot of dissatisfaction with the fact that Het Mara did not get a contract. And we thought it important on Mason and Guest to reach out to Mr. Mansa Nadir, who is actually not only the Speaker of the House in Guyana, but he's also the President of the Everest Club that Het Mara is from. And he's
no, Andrew, correction. Het Mara is not from the Everest Cricket Club. He's from Young Warriors.
Okay, he's from Young Warriors. Okay, but you're the President of the Everest Club. Right, okay.
Yes, I am.
And you have expressed a lot of disappointment. You've gone public in relation to Het Mara not getting a contract. Now, my question to you, why do you believe that Het Mara should have gotten a contract?
He has merited it. the talent that he has, his performance on the field hasn't been outstanding in the test matches, but for a 24-year-old, what I consider superstar, and clearly the IPL did too, you just don't give a person a $1.1 million contract who has not performed and who doesn't have that talent to be awarded that. So, in solidarity with respect to good cricketing decisions, our club, which is 70 miles away from where Hetemaya home, home club is, in solidarity, we wanted to speak out. Because clearly the rationale being given by the selectors at Cricket West Indies just doesn't measure up.
Could you explain that? What do you mean by that? It doesn't measure up.
Here you have a young 24-year-old, just a few years at the highest level, and being discarded. And when we saw the red ball squad, the second time he missed out, and you saw all the people with averages below him making that side, clearly it has to do with something more than his talent or his fitness. And we've seen this before. And if people don't speak up, selectors with their own bees in their bonnets will continue to do injustice to cricketers and cricket. Let me give you an example. And I've been around a little while. No big professional cricketer, but I consider myself a pretty decent administrator. When Sarwan, as a young person, had made a series of ducks, one morning at 3 o'clock our time, my old-time phone rang. And it was Sarwan on the phone. Sarwan and my daughter went through primary school and so. And he had just gotten bowled for a duck. And I listening on the radio. And the young man said, "Uncle, could I speak to Marissa?" So I said, "Boy, what's happening to you? It's only duck, duck. That's not the Sarwan I know." And Sarwan had been playing with my father-in-law when he brought teams to England since he was 12 and 13. And he said, "One of the problems I have is everybody telling me how to bat. I have Dujon telling me this. I have Jimmy Adams. I have the selectors, the manager." I said, "Well, you have to do yourself your own justice and prove them wrong with your bat. Get out there and mentally prepare yourself to bat." I will never forget that incident. And Sarwan went on to captain the West Indies. And he had had his problems with people. And so the inconsistency with selectors is part of our issue.
Oh, I see.
And here you have a young man, 24 years old, with more than a heap of talent. You know, I saw Vivian Richards at the Queen's Park Oval against Richard Hadley. And I just see Richards walk down and just knocking Hadley out the park. And when I saw Hetemaya back, and when I see him back, I see the same kind of raw talent. Yes, he may have to work on a little fitness and a little mentality, yes. But you don't discard him so easily. You don't.
Have you communicated? And you
can Paul.
And you communicated all this to Roger Harper and the Ghana Cricket Board? Your disappointment?
Well, the Ghana Cricket Board actually came out before us.
Right.
The Ghana Cricket Board came out publicly before us as we were actually issuing, preparing our release. We saw the Cricket Board release. But Kimo Paul is now a member of our club.
Right.
We had no problem with Kimo Paul not getting a retainer or getting selected. He's coming off of an injury. And I know that if I go at my club at 10 o'clock in the morning, I see Kimo is working on his game. So if there is any one person who we felt should not have been snubbed by Cricket West Indies selectors, was Hetemaya.
Your reaction to all this, Philo? Philo, your reaction?
I just want to ask a question.
Sure.
Andrew, there are policies in Cricket West Indies.
Mm.
The selectors have come up with what they think is the best possible answer for not awarding Hetmyer a contract. Now, the gentleman says he's talented.
Mm-hmm.
He's a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
$1.5 million in the Premier League. That is all fantastic, sir. Well, West Indies cricket needs more than that from Hetmyer. I know he's 24 years old. And my question to you, is anybody in his club or at your club or Ghana Cricket Board sitting down with this young man
mm-hmm.
to really outline what he needs to do? You just said fitness, concentration, which are small things to you, but they're big things to me. Anybody, is anyone at Ghana helping this young man to sort himself out and his game? I got a message this week from a guy called Dr. Tony Alton, who wanted to reach out to Hetmyer. I sent a message to St. Lucia. Hetmyer has not even responded to me yet.
Mm.
And this guy is going to give his time free to speak to this guy to help him. Is anybody in Ghana reaching out to help Hetmyer? Because if Hetmyer is not receptive to help, he's going to keep going down the line. And you're going to keep coming on this show saying he's talented. Yes, we all know he's talented. But he's missing the fundamental elements of being a professional cricketer. $1.5 million don't make you a professional cricketer. It makes you a half-decent rich fella. And if you don't manage yourself, you could easily be poor. So I want to know, what is Ghana doing to help this young man to become what we expect him to become, a great West Indies batsman?
Sir?
I am just not astonished. So here we have Philo Wallace saying, hey, this is really a Ghana problem. Y'all should fix this young man up. I don't know Hetmyer is a mental case. He's being made into one.
Mm.
The lords at Cricket West Indies have always been operating like this.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever goes into the chair seems to have inherited the lordship.
Mm-hmm.
So Cricket West Indies, if the constituent members of Cricket West Indies don't speak up, those who are put in place, they're going to continue to lord over West Indies cricket. And the constituents will have to speak up. And I have no reservations whatsoever to speaking up in terms of fairness and putting the responsibility directly back on Cricket West Indies for not lording over people. And I will say to Hetmyer, and I've said to him over the weekend, go out there when you get the next chance and talk with your bat. Talk with your bat. And destroy all those naysayers who exist and who want to put you down. So this is part of my issues with Cricket West Indies. And whoever occupies that chair, I say, behave that way.
Oh, dear.
The constituent members of cricket that comprise Cricket West Indies, no selector, no president, no director of Cricket West Indies make Cricket West Indies. Cricket West Indies is made up by its constituent members. And if the clubs like Young Warriors and those in Trinidad and Barbados and wherever we are, if we don't speak up, people will continue to do what they want with players and cricket.
All right.
And that's why today, with all those well-meaning stars and administrators, that's why we are treated like dirt internationally. We now have to qualify to be in the big league. A West Indies cricket team? Come on. Something is fundamentally wrong at the top two.
Oh, dear. Okay, stay with us. This is getting pretty hot on Mason and Guest. Let's pause for business cards. I know, Philo, you want to speak to our good friend there. By the way, he's a speaker in the house, so you got to be careful, Philo. He may be put out of the house. And, of course, I'm sure that Dr. Ford wants to engage as well. But let's pause for business cards. Mason and Guest is brought in association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting new sport and culture.
It's time to scratch. scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. Plenty lottery games to win.
Scratch.
Are you coming something? So run and get your ticket.
Scratch.
Scratch and you could win it. Over 120,000 in cash.
Scratch.
Barbados lottery.
Scratch.
So run and get your ticket.
Scratch.
Scratch and you could win it. Over 120,000 in cash.
Scratch.
Barbados lottery.
Scratch.
It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and Barbados lottery.
All right, well, we're going to let Dr. Mansingh go. I know that he's a very, very busy man. And, of course, Roland Hold is with us. He can say a little bit and maybe offer some advice to Hetmyer. Dr. Mansingh, your final comments. Just before you go, though, Dr. Mansingh, we're going to come back, of course, to Philo Wallace and, of course, our very good friend, Mr. Manson Adair, who I think in the time of Barak Jagdeo was a minister for about, 10 years or so. He is a very experienced guy, and it's good to have him on the show. Where's Dr. Mansingh? Is he still with us? Or is he gone? I think Dr. Mansingh has actually left us. Just double-checking to see if he's with us. He's left us, right? Has he? Okay. So Dr. Mansingh has left us. Roland Holder is with us. We're trying to find, of course, our very good friend Clive Hubert Lloyd. It's a Clive. And he will want to make a comment as well. I know he listens to the show. Now, let's come to you, Philo. Your reaction to what Mr. Nadir said?
Well, Andrew, nobody. I'm not doubting the talent of Chevron Hetmyer. You know, I think that this is a young man who has a lot of ability, and I think he's the future of West Indies cricket. But all said and done, there's something called personal responsibility. And Hetmyer himself, when you look at him when he was the under-19 youth world team, World Cup captain, and he won that in Bangladesh, Hetmyer, to me, you know, he's not kick on. He has not kick on for one reason or another. Yes, the club in Guyana has to take responsibility, sir, because they're the people who have helped him, and they need to continue to help him. But I'm saying that Hetmyer also needs to accept the help and realize that he's going through a turbulent passage in his career, and he's young enough. And if he has the right people around him, he can turn himself around and come out on top and laughing, because I look at him as one of, as a future West Indies captain. And I'm glad to see that Ghana pushes him in the responsibility of vice-captain role under Leon Johnson, who I think is an excellent leader. And for one reason or another, he has not kicked on at the West Indies level. But I think that Hetmyer needs to have the right people around him to help him. But he has something called personal responsibility, which he also needs to take care of. Because if you don't manage yourself, then you cannot expect good results to come down the road. So he has a responsibility. He's in Guyana, and he's in St. Lucia, sorry, and you said to him, score runs. That is all good and well to score runs. But how does he get all of that mental thing into his mind, exclude all the things that are happening around him, and get into his mind, his main focus and his main goal as a cricketer, score runs. And fitness, sir, is very important in this modern day game. If you look at India, Virat Kohli said he's taking no prisoners when it comes to fitness. So I don't think we should second guess fitness, even at a 24-year-old. And I heard Dr. Mansingh speak about fitness. Some players will be fitter than others. And that is all good and well. But we need to pay more emphasis on fitness, because at the end of the day, as Roland Holder said, these bad secure bubbles are hard to live in. And mentally, it drains you. I've been in a bubble I've been in isolation for 10 years. And I had to do things to try and keep my head going. If not, you just go freak. So these guys, fitness is part of it. So they need to stay fit if they're going to come through this turbulent time in cricket. This COVID passage is a serious passage, and it's going nowhere in a hurry. Mm-hmm. And I would expect people like Hetmyer and those guys to be the first to receive 2 vaccinations. Send a message to the rest of the cricketers. Look, it is important to get it. All these are things that can help him in developing himself. I'm pushing himself above the rest and coming out on top again, because he is the future, sir, but he needs help. And I hope the people in Guyana, all those people, the good self, all the other people, will give him the right advice. And don't worry about the selectors. The selectors have a job to do. Hetmyer has a job to do as well. And that is to score runs as a batsman.
Okay. I have a question for our friend from Guyana. How do you perceive the comments of the West Indian captain who, in summary, suggested that Hetmyer should articulate why he isn't given a contract and knows. Is this something that is common knowledge, or is it known to you what he was driving at?
It is not known to me, and I wouldn't put myself in the position of a mind reader to read his mind. But what I would say to the selectors at Cricket West Indies is that don't be so quick in discarding people. Don't be so quick in discarding people. If you had dropped from the Red Ball squad, Hetmyer, and you had gone with younger, more younger, talented, or potentially talented people, instead of going with 29-year-olds and 28-year-olds, or as one selector said, we have to bring a leg spinner into the team. If you don't have an international superstar leg spinner, you don't experiment with one who has been tried over and over again and can't live up to it. So it's that inconsistency with the principles and the policies that are guiding these selectors that I have a problem with.
And what's happened to the issue, number one? And number two, are you aware of how the young Hetmyer has been affected by losing his contract?
For me, he seems pretty private. He has his own way of dealing with that. And I want to believe we are certainly, for those who are speaking from his corner, he's not going to let us down. I feel very confident that this has strengthened him. And more than confident, I feel that he's going to answer the critics. And we've seen many good players like Hetmyer go through this phase. And they will bounce back. And so you don't discard for people who have had a long run at it, perform worse than him, and then say that you have special policies, right? Look, some players, and cricket is now not only about talent, it's also about science. I agree. Fitness. But a person scoring runs and a Cornwall taking wickets, you still pick him. Nobody could tell me Cornwall is fitter than Hetmyer, right? And I remember there was an off-spinner named Jack Noriega. Jack Noriega from Trinidad. And in one season, he swept. And Lance Gibbs was the standard bearer for off-spinning in the world. And yet the West Indies played two off-spinners against England. Jack Noriega and Lance Gibbs. And yes, that was Noriega's season. He did get in one test more wickets than Gibbs. But he didn't have the longevity. He didn't have it. So
what about?
Go ahead.
What about Bishu, Devendra Bishu, emerging player of the year, and had a good few seasons and has disappeared from Guyana's cricket? And I mean, what's happening with him? Hasn't
disappeared. In fact, while I might not have been a big cricketer, I knew Devendra as a little boy, because I visit and my relatives come from the area where he plays, Albion. Mm-hmm. Bishu is actually doing a lot of training with the Albion Cricket Club right now. He's working on his game still. And it's that kind of mental strength that you have to have. He hasn't disappeared from the scene. When Pramod came and took more wickets than him, I didn't complain, though Bishu is very, very close to me. He calls me Uncle Manzoor. Very close to me. But Pramod was outperforming him. I know young Moti well. Young Moti plays as a guest player for our team. Many times, our club, Everest, do have quite a lot of matches, and Moti is one of our guest players. And we're happy to see him make the squad. So we're going to stand up in the corner of right and fairness. That's where we're standing.
Right.
And if go ahead, Ange.
Well, we found Sir Clive Lloyd, You might have played with him, you know.
I admired him. I like the first Black Panther we knew.
lovely. And of course, we found him. I don't think he's in Burbies. Sir Clive, are you in Burbies?
Hello.
Are you in Burbies?
I can't hear you that well, Andrew.
Okay. Let's see if we can hear you better. Are you hearing me better now, Sir Clive?
Hello.
Are you hearing me better now, Sir Clive?
Hold on a minute. Put it down a
little bit. Hello.
Hold on.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello. Are you hearing us better now, Sir Clive?
I can hear you a little better, but I'm sorry you couldn't come through to my other phone. I don't know why.
Okay. All right. No problem. Well. Once you can hear us, we're a big debate about Hetmyer, and of course we've got Mr. Manson Adair, who is the president of the Everest Club, and he's also the Speaker of the House. So you got to be careful with your language, Sir Clive. What is your reaction to all of this, though, in relation to Hetmyer? Are you surprised he didn't get a contract, Sir Clive?
Anyhow, good evening to all. Listen, it's just simple. The guy's got ability, we know that. All he has to do is produce the runs, and there should be no problem. It's obvious that they're talking about his fitness. Well, you know, that would, we will find out how good he is and how long he bats and so on. Mm. And it's a situation as a batsman. You put some scores up there, fine.
Mm.
It's obvious that there's a fitness situation. You look at Cornwall, you're thinking, well, you know, but Cornwall can bowl 50-odd overs. So he's got to be, he's a big unit, there's no doubt about that, and I think they're taking those things into consideration, your weight, your height, and so on. I presume that's how they're assessing people. But we all know Puran, Hetmyer, they're talented guys, you know, but they have to, that talent must come out with runs. If you're a bowler, it's wickets.
Mm-hmm.
Like Roach is doing at Surrey.
Right.
Producing the stuff. It's not anybody, I don't think. It's obvious that when you pick teams, people are always worried about why isn't X played or why isn't Y played. The point is, once you produce the goods, you get rid of that. That is why, during my time winning, I got rid of insularity. There's nobody saying, well, why isn't X picked or why we're winning. Good?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I want to speak about, too, is that we have moved from number 9 to number 6. And I want people to say, listen, congratulations, lads. Continue. Right. Things are going to be tough, but we want you to go further up. Give the guys some impetus. Give them that you know, the encouragement to do well. All I can hear is, oh, we are at number 6. We were at number 9 a couple of months ago.
Right.
The last two tours, we haven't lost.
Mm-hmm.
So I want people to give our young players credit.
Mm-hmm.
The Hetmyers and all these guys, they've got, the world is their oyster.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to them to produce the goods, then we wouldn't have this conversation.
Mm-hmm, I see. What advice would you have for Mr. Hetmyer, though? I mean, I believe you might have spoken to him before. There's no doubt about his talent. People question his fitness. He hasn't set the world on fire. If you had to see Mr. Hetmyer now, what would you tell him since he's lost his contract?
Well, I would tell him if try and get to that fitness level that they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I know he's earning good money, and that's great. You know, any cricketer that is earning money, I am happy with, because we are always bridesmaids, really, where the monetary side is concerned. Mm-hmm. So now, if you produce the goods, you will be paid well. Money is a subsidiary of success.
Right.
I would like to say to all the young people, Mr. Hetmyer and the rest, gentlemen, they are asking you to be fit. They want you to produce the goods, because if you do well, we would have a world-beating team. And we've had a bit of a pandemic, and we haven't been playing a lot of cricket. So we have to take that into consideration, too. But I still think, you know, in a one-day, I think he's just got a contract, hasn't he, Mr. Hetmyer, for the white ball? Am I right?
No. Hetmyer has nothing to do at all.
I thought he was called up for something.
The new contract is in the Pakistan League.
That's in the Pakistan League, yes. That's but not with West Indies.
Mm. I think the guy's got talent, and I'm sure it will come to fruition quite soon. He knows that people are talking about him, and they want him to do well. We all want him to do well, you know. And it's not that anybody dislikes him.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know that you can get to that level where you can, you know, produce the runs that you expect. Just like Sawan spoke to the Speaker of the House.
Yes, spoke to the Speaker.
I mean, he told him, listen, you know, you're not getting the scores. Get some big scores. And what did he do? Fine.
Mm.
He didn't get dropped again, or, you know, I don't know if he was dropped or what, but he was in the ascendancy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is what we have to get people to speak to these young men and women, I suppose, to, you know, that that the name of the game, if you're a batter, it's big scores and consistent scores.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with bowlers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, we have some good players, very good players, no doubt about that.
So, Clive, in the remaining minutes we've got left on the show, we've got just about 12 minutes left. We've got Roland Holabitis and, of course, Philo Wallace and your good friend, Mr. Manson Nadir, the Speaker of the House there in Guyana, and of course the president of the Everest Club. I know that you chose Demerara over Everest, but we wouldn't forgive you for that, Sir Clive. I'm the Demerara man. perhaps you may have even chosen the Georgetown Cricket Club, but of course you're DCC man.
And I will die a DCC man.
We know that.
No, good clubs.
Very good clubs. Roland. Any advice for Mr. Hetmyer, talented cricketer? If you had to see Hetmyer, what would you say to him? Roland?
I think Roland has left us.
Roland has left us. All right. Now, let's turn our attention to the next, we got 10 minutes left in the show. Your expectations, Philo, for this series, as you know, we're starting the promotion, the analysis. South Africa versus the West Indies, Philo, your expectations? You think we can beat them?
Andrew, I think West Indies can beat South Africa. South Africa is a transition stage at the moment of their cricket. Coach Mark Boucher has put up his sign and said, look, all responsibility falls on me.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the sporadic performances are not what South Africa cricket is about. They're going through some challenges as well. And as Sir Clive said, we've just jumped from number 9 to number 6 in work, which is a good thing. And South Africa are below us, so we need to continue to march on. And we obviously don't want to underestimate them. We know, Andrew, that the pitches at the Dharamsali Stadium can be quite sporty.
Right.
If Mr. Crafton gets it right, we can get some dukes. So, you know, they have good fast bowlers, the South Africans. Our batsmen will have to be able to adapt to that bowling. They're not going to come here looking to be defeated. They're going to play us really, really tough. And I think that we need to be on our P's and Q's. It's unfortunate that our test captain, Raffert, did not have a good time here in England playing for Gloucestershire. Although Gloucestershire is leading in their zone, he has not really made the volume of runs that was expected of him. So he's going back to the Caribbean. Obviously, a little depressed not getting runs, but obviously the experience. Azari Joseph as well, Andrew, has not really lived up to the villain of a fast bowler in these conditions. Well, Roach, as I said before, and Sir Clive said, has come here, he's done the business. So these guys will now have to go back to the Caribbean and just try to lift the rest of that squad and look to do well and carry on. Roach had Roach played with Hashim Amla, a former South African superstar batsman, and I hope that he would have picked his brain, some of those players in the South African unit that will be coming out to the Caribbean, just to have a little insight of what to do. But I think that we can do well once our players continue that upward trend and believe in themselves. And obviously, to beat South Africa in the Caribbean will be massive for our cricket. And it will help us as well going forward to Pakistan and the Australians. So it's a big summer for West Indies. And this this series against South Africa is really going to set the cats among the pigeons on where West Indies cricket truly is.
Sir Clive, your expectations?
Well, listen, we're playing at home, and I think that if we're playing at St. Lucia, the pitch does have a bit of bounce.
Mm-hmm.
And the South Africans have very good pace attack. Good. But their batting could be a little brittle. And I think that if our bowlers can bowl the line that is expected and be consistent, you never know. They don't play spin very well either. So I'm probably in a left-arm spinner would be a very integral part of our bowling attack.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that the three guys who played county cricket have done fairly well, and I hope that that experience will hold well for us when we have this series coming up against South Africa. The one problem we have is that opener with Craig.
Right.
Need to get a decent opener, someone who's going to stay around,
mm-hmm.
you know, long enough mm-hmm. to give us that start, because we keep losing wicket fairly often, early, and our middle order is being exposed. So we need. I don't know who the openers there that we can sort of with Craig. We must be able to get.
Mm-hmm. And then maybe Hetmeyer could have filled that breach.
Sorry?
Maybe Hetmeyer could have filled that breach.
Well,
just kidding.
The point is that we need somebody in there that will stay in there. And someone like Hetmeyer, we did it with Richards. He was making a lot of runs, but he was making runs outside of the test matches.
Right.
And I promoted him to open.
Ooh.
He got 100 and a big. So then I moved him back to 3.
Right.
Then Gordon came in with Fredericks. And that's how we developed that situation. So you never know with my opening if he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
If that is the position that will serve us in good, then we'll find. Why not? So it's something to think of. We have a lot of talented cricketers.
Mm-hmm.
And now is the time to show what we have. And this is a very good series because if we win this series, we go further up the ladder.
Yes, yes, we would. So, Clive...
And winning just like losing is contagious.
Two test matches. The first one starts on June the 10th. Do you think the West Indies, we've got the goods to win these test matches in St. Lucia?
Yeah, we have to think of that. We haven't lost in the last two test
series, right?
I agree with Philo. They're in transition too.
Yes,
but the point is, if we can just get ahead
mm-hmm.
and apply ourselves like we did in the last couple of seasons, we would be fine.
Right.
I think we've done extremely well in the last couple of series, and they seem to be gelling well with the new regime, and I can wish them the best of luck. I do have faith that we can do well
mm-hmm.
if we apply ourselves in the manner that is needed.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sir Clive, we just got another, 4 minutes or so left in the show. Let's go to Mr. Mansoor Nadir. I hope I got the pronunciation of your name correct. Did I get
perfect,
it
correct? Andrew.
Oh, perfect. All right. Give us a little background, though, because you told me that you're the Speaker of the House, and I think a couple of years ago you would have been, a Minister of Tourism? Is that correct? Give us a little background.
A little while ago, yes. But I want to join with both speakers before me, Fellow and Sir Clive,
mm-hmm.
in wishing the West Indies well. I've never turned my back on the West Indies. In spite of all, I enjoyed and I think we're going to win against South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Australia has always proven difficult to beat for us. But Sir Clive would remember that epic first tour of South Africa after they were reintegrated in Test cricket,
mm-hmm.
when it seemed that we were down, and then the fast bowlers came back and blew South Africa out of the out to the waters. So I'm going to wish them well. I will not turn my back on our West Indies cricket team and our West Indies cricket, but I would not zip my mouth if I see something is wrong.
Well, you're the speaker of the house, for, I mean, so we expect you to talk. You're the speaker. The speaker, you should expect me to
just
talk.
We just do like you. We control.
I like that one. And I understand you've been putting people out of the house. My good friend Imran Khan, the PR for the opposition, doesn't like you. He's saying that you are doing naughty things in the house. Is that true, Mr. Speaker? Is that true, Mr. Speaker?
Firm and fair hand. Fair and firm hand.
Yeah. I mean, like that.
And I want to say, for our cricket to perform best internationally,
right,
the action has to be done regionally, nationally, and locally. So every club, we're going to have professional coaches at the club level. The club facilities will have to be of great standards so that we give our players the opportunity to start with the best. So I am not going to say the selectors or West Indies cricket destroy cricket. I will say that we at the club level have a responsibility, like that foundation brick, to expose our players to the right techniques, talents, and facilities. And I will work at the foundation level.
Wonderful.
We wish the team well and look forward to a great season.
Wonderful. Well, of course, they're coming to Guyana, Pakistan. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to speak to Imran Khan and say to Mr. Khan that what you've been telling me about the speaker is not true at all. He's a wonderful man, very fair. And, of course, we will be consulting again sometime. I don't know if you ever met Sir Clive. Have you met Sir Clive before, Mr. Speaker? Have you met him?
Yes. We've met quite a few times. We've spoken quite a few times. And Sir Clive knows me well, too.
Yes. I know him quite well.
Yes. Is he a good man, Sir Clive? Is he a good man?
Listen, I think that when I was involved with him, we got on quite well. I think that he's been pretty good. As a minister, he did a marvelous job in while she was there, and I wish him the best of luck in his new post.
A big post. Put people out the house sometimes.
Thank you, Sir Clive.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, of course, Dr. Andrew Ford. No doubt you may become the Speaker of the House of Assembly in Barbados in the next administration running for the BLP. Of course, Philip Wallace is a big BLP man. We know that. And, of course, we know that Mr. Nadir is a PPP man, unlike Imran Khan. Not quite sure what Sir Clive is. We'll keep that very, very private indeed. I'm Andrew Mason. Yes, Sir Clive?
I'm a Guyanese.
You're a Guyanese. We love that. I'm Andrew Mason, a BLP and a DLP. We hope that you have a very good evening. Here's hoping for a better tomorrow. It's good night.